Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for joining me tonight. I thought tonight we would talk about something that is very close to my heart, and that is multifamily households. Now, the past couple weeks, I've been doing a little bit of research on this because I wondered exactly how widespread this is. Because it seems as though here recently, as you all know, I have, all of you who listen all the time, I have AJ, and I have other grandchildren that live with me. AJ is six, and he's the one that I talk about all the time because he's so hysterically funny. And he has been making quite a few new friends in kindergarten. And he always talks to me about this one and his grandma and that one and his grandma. And I said, geez, I guess you're not the only one who has a grandma living with him. And he goes, most of my friends' grandmas live with them, or they live with their grandma. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, Graham. He said, I don't think it's unusual. And I said, okay. So I did do some research. And apparently since 2010, there's been quite a an adjustment made. We all know, because we all read about it in the paper, and some of it affected us personally. Jobs were taken away, and a lot of people my age took early retirement. And a lot of young people, purely and simply, lost their jobs. A lot of your bigger places downsized, and of course when that happens, then here in Florida, that usually takes a toll on our service industry, our hotels, our restaurants, our resorts, the things that keep a lot of people fed in the state of Florida have to do with resorts and service industry. So, indeed, it is true, and according to what I read online, since 2010 has been when it has become so prevalent. And there were several stories, and I liked most of them. Most of them hit, as I said, very close to home. My husband and I are both retired, and my oldest son lives with us, with two of his sons. His oldest son's girlfriend lives with us. My daughter lives with us with her two kids. And consequently, there's 10 of us that live here. And which is fine with me, because that's what I'm all about. And I've always thought it was a wonderful idea. As a child, I was very close to my grandparents, especially my maternal grandparents, a very eclectic couple named Cecil and Cyril. Until I was probably a teenager, I actually thought that they named each other, because I couldn't believe that a lady named Cecil and a man named Cyril would meet each other and have names that just match so perfectly. Plus that, one's birthday was on the 6th, and the next one's birthday was the very next day on the 7th of January. And that I just figured they planned that whole thing. Loved them very much, and they were a big part of my life as I was growing up. Often they lived with us, or we lived with them. I had, there were five of us kids, and it could be very cozy at times. And I can also remember my mom's sister and her kids would live with us on occasion, and she had four kids as well. And it just seemed like we always made do. There was always a big pot of something on the stove, always a giant pot of coffee, and lots of peanut butter and jelly, as I recall. So everybody did okay, and that's pretty much my house today. It's often that I feed more than the 10 of us. It's often that somebody is here, maybe another grandchild, maybe another child maybe a friend of one of the kids, somebody, almost every night, there's an extra person here to have dinner with us. So, as I said, when I started researching, I found some kind of interesting facts. And I see Shelley has joined us, and although Shelley is not married, she lives with her mom, and I know for a fact that Shelley has offered her home to many family members, and even on one occasion, my family members stayed with her because she has a large house. And and Shelley is an animal person, so she also has quite an entourage. When I very first met her, which was back in like 2002, she had 125 ferrets. So when you talk about making room for things, she's an old hand at that as well. Hi, Miss Shelley.
Hi, Renee. How are you?
I'm good, honey. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing very good. Listening to you talk about my wild kingdom over there.
Yes. Well, you have a wild kingdom with four legs, and I have a wild kingdom with two. So that's probably why we've always been able to relate so easily. So one of my topics tonight is about multi-family households, and I don't think you were on when I first mentioned that AJ on several occasions says to me, my friend's grandma or my friend's nanny or my friend's nana or yaya told me this, and I'm like, is everybody, you know, got their grandmas around them like you do? And he goes, yeah, just about everybody, you know. And I thought, geez, I like that, but it still took me a little bit by surprise, you know. So I did some research, and it appears as though in 2010 is when it became, first of all, necessary, because so many people lost their jobs. So many people were asked to take early retirement, and people had to make major adjustments. Mm-hmm. Groceries and utilities go up with each person in a house. However, if you're living in a rented home, you save probably a difference of anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000 a month by sharing everything with someone else.
Oh, sure.
And easily, right? Easily. I mean, because you figure a going rate today for a two-bedroom, one-bathroom apartment, say, if you can find one for $800 a month, you're very, very lucky. And your utilities, of course, here we use, here in Florida, it's a little bit different than other places, but it gets balanced out because we don't usually have to use the heat but a few days out of the winter months. But you're talking anywhere from 100 to, gosh, in a big house. My electricity bill here in the house we live in right now is often over $600 a month. So
mine used to be $450.
Yeah, it's very easy to do. And then you figure, you know, out here in the acreage, we have well water. So there's no cost involved in paying for a water company, but it's very costly to keep a good well with with keeping the water clean and keeping your pump working and keeping it salted and charcoal and all of the above. So I figured each person, if they share, say a couple, they save $400 to $700 a month easily when they combine households. I even went so far as to research, you know, like you figure in a rented house, you're going to have your rent, you're going to have your utilities, which is often your electricity. And now everybody bundles on their internet and their cable and their telephone, and you can make that as expensive as you're willing to go, or as you can be as frugal with that as you want to. You need a phone, and if you can get a better deal by getting cable and having your phone with your cable and having Wi-Fi, because most of us You know, it's very rare that you find a household that doesn't have a computer. For one thing, kids almost always have to have a computer to do homework on. So it really gets quite costly. But then I thought to myself, the American dream of owning your own home, then you have all those bills. You have your monthly mortgage payment, which usually includes an escrow account to pay your taxes and your insurance, and that can be immensely costly. I mean, that can be for a $100,000 house if you signed on back in 2009 when the interest rates were so insane. I think that was the year that they went so crazy. People were selling $350,000 dollar houses and giving them to people that didn't make much more than $9 an hour.
I know.
The interest
was
so low. And now, 2 years later, when people were losing their jobs, of course, here in the Acreage, we saw a lot of it. However, things are changing, and the homes are being bought up again, and things are turning a corner, which we're all very grateful for. But it still makes sense to me to combine households. And I'll tell you, one of the biggest reasons is because one of the reasons our world has become so unkind is because of the frustration people feel when they're in over their heads, right?
Absolutely. I mean, financial problems, I think, is the number one cause that marriage breaks up.
Absolutely. And friendships.
Statistically, I believe that if you look at the statistics, they say that's the number one cause is financial stress.
Right. So even if you're in a position, I mean, years ago it was the family home, and it just went down through the generations. And grandma and grandpa were still there, and mom and dad and the kids. And today, because people are living much longer, it's easy to have four generations in a house.
Right, right.
I mean, I have great-grandchildren, and if one of my great-grandchildren were to live with us, that would be Spikes in my generation, my kids' generation, my grandkids' generation, and then the next generation. That would be four generations of my family living under one roof. And
exactly.
Years ago, three generations was nothing, and they all just helped each other, and everybody had responsibilities. And that's one of the things that I think is also missing, because the pros of living in a situation like that, first of all, teaches you a very important thing, and I've always been big on this, and it's called sharing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you learn to share and not be selfish and do things, you know, that are fair to everybody else in your little domain, you become a nicer person even in the workplace, because it becomes commonplace for you to not feel like everything has to be yours, 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 yours. And I don't know if everybody out there has ever met a very, very spoiled child. I always laughed at the chocolate factory, Willy Wonka and the chocolate factory, because in that, all the little kids that won had all different major problems. Do you remember that story, Shell?
Yes.
Willy Wonka?
Well, I never saw the whole movie, but I saw bits and pieces of it, and I did see one scene where this really bratty kid got sucked in the machine or something. I mean, he survived it, obviously, but it was a funny scene, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and Charlie, who wins, you know, who gets the ticket just because of the love of his mother's parents and his father's parents, and they all live in this little one building house in a flat, it looks like London or something, that they're all living in, and they're very close confines, and they have soup every night for dinner, and they all chip in together to get him the candy bar for his birthday. And he doesn't win the golden ticket. He ends up coming up with the golden ticket another way. But he's the only child that comes to the chocolate factory with any manners. Everybody else thinks that they should just have it, and, you know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And we, I guess it's in my head because AJ and I just watched it recently, and he was like, "What a brat!" And I said, "Oh, I'm so glad you think he's a brat, because you're right, he is a brat."
It's a good thing he recognized that.
Yeah, yeah. I said, "See, that's how you look when you think everything should be yours." And he goes, "Graham, I share." I said, "Yeah, most of the time you do, but you know, there are moments, you know." I have another story to tell you about him, and we're done talking about this. It's a very cute one. But at any rate, I do think that multi-family households have a major pro, and that's reinforcing the family unit, teaching the children how to share and care, and to show some responsibility so that, you know, simple little thing. You make a dinner, and everybody's allowed, you know, to eat as much as they want. But you see, there's two pieces of chicken or two pork chops left on the plate, and you know that Uncle Mike hasn't come in to eat yet. And in a family that's paying attention, you know, and cares about each other, you say, "Is Uncle Mike coming home for dinner?" "Yes." So nobody touches that piece of chicken or that pork chop.
Exactly.
That seems like such a little thing, but you realize that it's not always true everywhere.
Right.
You know, well, and for me, those things are important.
Right, because people aren't self-aware, they don't pay attention, they're wrapped up in their own little world. It's not about us, it's about me. And mm-hmm. one of the things when you talk about family values or when you talk about having values, period, it's that ability to look at the big picture. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be concerned with things that would make you happy and that would fulfill you, but it has to be in a family oriented or a community oriented mindset, where it's like what's good for me and what's good for everybody that's going to be affected by what's good for me. You know, what's good for
us.
That's
right.
And
people to look at the us,
right?
Mhm, mhm. And it also, we've talked about this before on the show about different news things that we hear about and how you know, how mean kids can be with each other about who gets what and what gets who and coveting other people's, you know. He has a better bike than me. And then as you get older, you know, nobody likes the girl with the vet. You know, because her parents could afford to get her a vet. It's just another one of those things. It's supposed to happen when you're very young, so that when you get old enough, so that you can really utilize those kind of morals and manners, then you do. Instead of getting angry with somebody because you're coveting what they have, or the fact that they got it first or something like that. It's such a waste of time, such a horrible waste of time, and it serves no purpose, not for you or for anyone else.
That's right.
I also think that being around other adults teaches them respect, too.
Right. And also, when you look at what other people have and you allow yourself to feel bad because somebody has more than you, then what you do is you limit your expectations of what you can ever have in the future, because now you've kind of gone down that path of I feel deprived, where when I see somebody that has something that I don't have that I like, first of all, I get excited for that person. And this is for real, by the way. And I'll say, mm-hmm. wow, that's really fantastic. I'm happy for that person. And what mm-hmm. it does is it makes me feel, well, if that person can get it, well, then why couldn't I someday? And what it does is it opens me up to possibilities. It opens me up to maybe I could have that one day. So I end up feeling good, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a little mind trick, but I'm telling you, it puts you in a good place, and it keeps you in a better frame of mind. And it, when you have hope, when you realize that you have possibilities and good things can come to you, it just puts you in a position of being aware of that. And then sometimes you can actually draw good stuff into you. But when you're mm-hmm. always negative, when you're always talking about everybody else has more than you, it's almost like you're mandating that that's how your life's going to go.
Mhm. Well, we both believe in the power of positive thinking. for one thing, just the immediate frame of mind, one versus the other, feeling good about something and feeling about possibilities and all of the things that can happen if you if you do this or if you do that or if you don't do this and you don't do that, versus always thinking about poor, poor, pitiful me, I'm going to go eat worms, then you usually live on a diet of worms. You know, that's the way it works out.
Exactly. It's a very good way of putting it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it isn't hurting us. As I said, you know, that's the kind of household we live in. And, everything isn't always totally smooth. You know, somebody uses up all the Head and Shoulders or somebody forgets to put the toilet paper back on the toilet paper holder or, you know, little things like that. Or everybody has a specific laundry day and somebody leaves their clothes in the dryer there's always stuff like that. But again, everything that we do like that is a lesson to teach us about ourselves, because one day I left the clothes in the dryer and, you know, somebody got annoyed with me, even though not too many people are foolish enough to get annoyed with me. But if they, you know, grumble as they walk away, then the next day they might be the one that leaves their clothes in the dryer, because it happens to all of us. And again, there's another little lesson to be learned about tolerance and remembering that one day that could be you, purely and simply. But what really floored me, I'll tell you the truth, what really floored me is the money end of things. I don't know, Shell, how a lot of people are doing it, because I know from being a manager for the last 30 years, I know how much money some people are living on, and I don't know how they're doing it.
Wow. Yeah, I know.
Can you imagine two high school graduates? They've landed a halfway decent job. Maybe they're, you know, I have a granddaughter who's a teacher now, and she's doing all right for herself, but she could never buy a house. She could never do anything like that, not at this point in time, and pay the mortgage and the taxes and the, you know, all the things that go with owning your own home. So it's kind of scary out there. So pulling together and helping each other, I just feel like it's the win-win thing. And it also keeps you with a close compound. You know, so that if one day somebody's really sick, you don't lose the whole farm.
That's a good way of putting it, you know. And I'm kind of like you. I like to have everybody close-knit, you know, everybody accounted for and, you know. There's ways of bringing the family together and, you know, and like you said, as long as you have an understanding, there has to be rules. There has to be an even share. Otherwise, it won't work. But if you bring the family together, you could have 20 adults living in a house. As long as everybody has a clear understanding of what's expected of them, it can work. And it does work. And it works every day in a lot of different places. But when it falls apart, when it's not beneficial, is when everybody just makes the decision to live together. Nothing is discussed. Everybody assumes everybody is going to do certain things. And then at 6 months down the road, everybody's at each other's throat because what one person expected, somebody else expected the opposite. So I think it's a fantastic idea. I've seen it work many, many times with multiple adults, sometimes family members, sometimes friends who decided to group together, you know, for financial reasons. And I can tell you right now, every time the parameters were set at the beginning, things went pretty smoothly. But I almost 100% of the time, when it was just kind of like, let's just do it without any discussion, more times than not, it did not work out. And it almost turned into like a free-for-all, and then everybody was at each other's throats inside of a few months. You know, things just kind of blew up. So it is a phenomenal idea, and my only advice is to absolutely set the ground rules ahead of time and then go for it, because it really is a fantastic way of bringing people around you that you love and respect, that love and respect you, for support. And I'm not talking necessarily financial, although financial is definitely
right.
a benefit, but just
yeah.
for camaraderie, for conversation, for moral support when you need it. You've got people right there then, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it can be a very, very healing experience.
Well, and like you said, it's also, well, let's remember one of our calmest times in history was during the hippie era. The
mm-hmm.
hippie era. It was a time when people, you know, spoke of peace and everybody was okay with everybody. And I lived in Ithaca, New York then, and my kids were very, very, actually my kids weren't even born yet by that time, like say 1965, 66, in that
mm-hmm.
time in your rural America. Lots of hippies, lots of people who talked about, you know, caring about each other and not fighting. And of course, then when the when the wars started coming around again, look at all the people that fought against the wars for so long.
Right.
Look at, I mean, you know, poor Hanoi Jane there. I can't even say that. Hanoi Jane. She, you know, she like. She still gets harassed because of what she did. And people called her names because she didn't want to fight with anybody. And I, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, granted, she might have gone about it the wrong way, but was it so wrong for her to not want, you know, not lose any young people? I don't think that was so terrible. But there was a time when people lived together. Hippie communes in upstate New York, where we were living then, were very prevalent. And some of them became very, very prestigious businessmen. There was one that started making yogurt, and he became very wealthy, and so did the rest of his commune. So, you know, it all depends on how, you know, how, I don't know, how organized you can be, and how much loyalty and everything you can generate within a group like that, as to whether or not it's going to be not just suitable for everybody to live that way, but also also lucrative. So there were two in Ithaca, as a matter of fact. One started making cheesecake, and the other, because it was dairy country, you know. So one started making cheesecake, and one started making yogurts, and they both got rich. It was awesome, you know. I mean, and I was up there not too long ago, and they still, they're still around up there. So it was really kind of amazing, and I've thought about that a lot of times through the years, how everybody made fun of them, but they learned how to grow their own food. They lived very much like a vegan would live, and they drank goat's milk, and I wouldn't praise them about their hygiene, but that didn't seem important to them. What seemed important to them was their survival. And, of course, they endured the winter months there, too, so they all had to stay warm. But a lot of them settled on land with apple orchards and canned apples and sold apples and everything. It was a beautiful time, I thought, and they were surviving in a time when there were other people who were not. So I guess the reason I wanted to bring this up tonight is because I hear so many people struggling, and I know I've struggled many times in my life, my family and my husband and I. And honestly, where there's a will, there's a way, people. And if you just give up, nothing ever happens for you. But if you realize that sometimes you just have to think a little bit outside of the box and bring yourself to a better place, then, you know, you really are capable of achieving almost anything you endeavor to do. And that includes personal things, that includes things that involve business or other people or partnerships or anything. But effort and the ability to, you know, think outside of the box, like I said, not think that somebody else is just supposed to give you a job and pay you for something you're doing. Think about what you can offer to people that has a value. And if you're struggling right now with those kind of things, that's what you need to think about and make something work, you know, because I've done it twice in my life. I've started over, completely started over. I'm 64 and I've started over twice. This is my third time trying to figure out what to do with my life and how to still be, a force in my life. Something that works and something where I make a difference and something where I'm still beneficial to the people in my life and to the new people that I meet. And quite frankly, if I can do it, I'm pretty damn sure anybody can do it. So there are opportunities, and I feel bad when I hear people talking like, you know, they're just lost and they don't know what to do. There's always something you can do, but you have to put yourself out there and you have to try.
Right, and I absolutely agree with that, because there's so many people that say, there's too many, there's scarcity in jobs, and there's either scarcity in jobs or they're working in a job that they absolutely hate. Both those situations, as far as I'm concerned, are equally tragic, okay?
Yep.
If you want to be working and you can't find something, that's frustrating. And if you're working in a job where you're making yourself sick every day because you got to get up in the morning and go to this place and, you know, in order to get a paycheck end of the week, I think that's tragic. And the one thing is that there are so many things that people can do. There was a show I was watching, it was about 6 months ago, and they had all these people that had lost their jobs. Excuse me. They had all these people that had lost their jobs. They didn't know what they were going to do. So they were showing how, you know, people can really be ingenious and innovative. And they were showing how, you know, the one guy loved painting. So he started putting cards in all of his neighbor's property. This was a passion of his. He liked painting houses. But he had worked in an office. He was a white collar worker. Lost his job, his desk job. And he became a painter, and he ended up becoming a professional painter. He was so successful just by word of mouth that he ended up making more than he was making. It took him a year to get there, but he ended up making more than he was making in the desk job, and now he's a professional painter, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he got licensing and everything else. And, you know, they had story after story after story like this. What's really a good idea is for people to figure out what they like to do. One of the problems is when people look for jobs, they don't have a clear idea of what they want to do, so they keep hitting dead ends. They get this job, it's not really quite right, or they get that job, it's not really quite right. They don't really have a clear understanding of what they want to be doing. They're trying to grab at straws for something that's going to pay their bills. And if they would do what they like to do, the money would end up following. Even if they took a job that was a little bit lower paid than they wanted to, if they enjoyed themselves, the opportunities would come. And I've seen it happen so many times in business where somebody just said, you know what, I'm just sick and tired of being sick and tired. I don't want to work at this dead-end job anymore. They started doing something they were passionate in, and then all of a sudden they ended up meeting people that got them into it in a bigger way, and they ended up making more money. And like I said, I've seen this particular story play out numerous times with various individuals. You know,
absolutely.
But it's very important to not feel trapped.
Well, and to feel to feel valuable. When we feel value in ourselves, it's amazing what can happen to our whole psyche. When you know, people have always said to me, well, for years, people accused me of being a codependent.
Mm-hmm.
Because I need people to care about me. And they actually had me feeling guilty about that. And for all of you out there who said that about me, you should be ashamed of yourselves if you're still out there and if you're listening. Because there's nothing wrong with caring about people and caring if people like you. And every time I hear somebody say, I don't give a damn if they don't like me, they're lying to you and to themselves. Because
I
there's
agree.
Nobody that feels like that unless there's something wrong with them, unless they need, you know, some help. There's nobody that really feels that way. So being a codependent, in my book, means that you care. And
that's right.
I guess anything can be taken to extreme, don't get me wrong. And I realize that, I mean, I've watched some movies before where the mom is like this overbearing, control freak. And I guess I could have those tendencies. Although I always feel like, you know, people put me there because they don't want to do it themselves. And so they wait for me to jump into that seat. And that could be my own head doing that to me. But again, you know, I still really don't see anything wrong with it as long as I don't force people into doing things that they don't want to do. But I do think that reinforcing people about the way they feel about themselves, I think everybody needs somebody like that in their life.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's no doubt about that.
Well, and it makes, you know, at the same time, when you hear somebody say, you know, you can really do this and this is going to be okay for you to try, it's like a blessing. You know what I mean? You know, like some people need to get a blessing about a lot of different things so they feel good because they're a little bit wary or scary or whatever. And one person just says to them, you know, give it a shot. I'm pretty sure you could do it. And that little bit of fortification sometimes
that's
gives
all,
somebody
that's
a backbone that's right, that they didn't even know they had.
That's right.
And that's what this is all about. Everything that we're talking about is about that.
I'm losing you. I don't know if you can hear. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. The phone's getting a little garbly there. Am I still clear?
Yes, you're very clear.
Okay. Well, at least right now. But you know,
there's
one
storms
of the things
still
that,
out there brewing, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was driving in really hellacious traffic about an hour ago, and I couldn't even see the hood of my car at one point. You know,
mm-hmm.
all the cars around me, they all had their flashers on, well, probably about 2 hours ago. But it was really awful, you know, coming up, and it was just, it was one of those type of torrential rains where you're not even seeing the end of the hood of your own vehicle.
Right.
You know, everyone's
yeah.
like backing down. At one point, I think we were like 15. We were driving 15 miles an hour. You know, until
yeah.
we got on the other side of it. But you know, but again, and I've experienced this myself. I've experienced it with you sometimes because when we were working together at Hippocrates, there was a couple of times where, you know, I tend to be a very confident person. You know, I know what I can do. I know what I can't do. But I even had times where you saw an ability in me that I was questioning. And sometimes all it takes is that little, you know, sometimes it's just a single comment. You can do it. Those
yep.
couple of words coming from the right person at the right time, somebody that you respect, somebody that you have a
yep.
regard for, and now all of a sudden you're in a completely different place, you're motivated, and now you have all the confidence to just go forward and make it happen.
Right.
And a lot of times people will come out of their comfort zone just with a little tiny bit of support and a kind of you could do it attitude, and people will come out of their comfort zones and make accomplishments that they otherwise probably would not have been able to do. So
yep.
you know, so
yep.
that type of interaction is so important.
It's everything, and the more we can do it for each other, and the more we realize that we can do it for each other and know that it can be done back for us because things like that are reciprocal, then
right.
then the better off we're all going to be. And, of course, that's one of the reasons that I'm all for this multifamily housing and things like that because times are tough. And, again,
mm-hmm.
people, you walk into people. I was in Home Depot the other day, and these two ladies, both of them well into their 60s, I thought they were going to come to fisticuffs.
Oh, sheesh.
Because the one, she was taking a very long time taking care of the problem, and she was standing in line, and she was humping and hawing, and like, and we were all, there was like four other people in line, and we just thought it was amusing. Nobody was saying anything, just grinning at each other, you know, because they were kind of bugging each other. But then it turned to like insults, personal insults. Why do you dress like a hooker? And why don't you dress more appropriately? Which she said, you should dress more appropriately when you're out instead of like a teenage hooker or something like that, she said to her. And the other lady turned around and swore at her. And I was like, oh, my good God, you're grown women. Knock it off. But it's the stress. It's the straws that break their back. Little things push them right over the edge. One minute they're fine, and the next minute they're ranting and raving like they're 11. And you see
right,
it all
and like people should understand that, and this is probably going to be a hard thing for poor people to accept, but a lot of times when you think you're angry at somebody, especially a stranger, okay, because usually anger has to have some kind of an emotion behind it. Emotion you're going to have with a perfect stranger, you know. Nine times out of ten, when you're angry at a stranger or when you're angry at somebody, you're actually not angry with them. You're angry with the situation. You feel helpless, and you're taking it out on somebody else because you can control that few minute interaction with that person, whether it's a friend or a family member or a perfect stranger. For that few minutes, you feel in control. So your anger comes out, you're dealing with this situation, you're trying to win something, but all it is it's the lack of control over your situation that's manifesting like that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And again, it all stems from, you know, for years I've preached to women about their nest. You know, I've said this to you, Shelley. Our nest, where we fly away from every day, or if you're like me now and are at home every day, your nest has to be safe, loving, caring, supportive of you, comfortable for you, make you feel, I guess, safe and happy and like you can venture out whenever you feel like it, and you always have this safe place to come back to in case you're trying to overcome something in the outside world that is a little traumatic for you. So if you can start like that and have that place, then that makes you so much stronger in the rest of your endeavors. I mean, there's people every day that are back and forth from a hospital because they have, you know, a dying family member or a child that has been sick since birth, and they've done this every day. These people, in my eyes, are like angels. They're like saints.
Right.
And yet there's millions of them that do things like this, take care of children with lifelong challenges that will always make them dependent on someone. And these people are amazing people, but their nest has to be a very special one, so that they're kept in a safe place, you know, when they venture outside of their nest. And the same goes for the people that are struggling with the challenges themselves. They become an adult, and they still know that they have things that stops them from doing certain things. They need to have that safe feeling. So your home life has got to be, it's your starting point from birth. It's your starting point when you go into kindergarten. It's your starting point when you go to your first job. It's your starting point when you're just leaving to go out into the world. It's your starting point. And everybody knows you can't win a race if you're not ready at the gate. You know, you have to be prepared to run the race, and that's what your home life does for you. I see so many young people that are struggling in so many ways because their home life, it's not about being rich either, because money obviously has a lot to do with comforts, but it doesn't have anything to do with support. So,
right.
You know, if you are struggling out there and trying to make ends meet, you ought to think about this. You ought to think about combining families. And like Shelley said, draw guidelines. I have charts all over the house. Who can do their laundry on what day you're supposed to take out the garbage, what day you're supposed to do this. These are all over my house. And we change them all the time to accommodate the different family members for something else they've got going on. And do the kids ever get yelled at? Oh, my God. But it's still with love, and it's still about keeping us all happy and safe. So I really think if you are struggling with stuff like that, give this some thought and, you know, stir it and see what kind of soup you can make out of it, because it may help you and it may save what's going on in your life right now. I don't want to spend any more time on this subject, because there's two more things that I'd like to talk about.
Sure.
One of them is Caitlin Hunt, the young 18-year-old woman in Sebastian who was arrested today because it came to light that she has been having a homosexual affair with a 14-year-old girl. And according to sources, they don't say where the sources came from, but apparently there was some inappropriate behavior at Sebastian's school. They arrested her, and she is facing 20-some years in prison if they find her guilty of any kind of sexual misconduct with this 14-year-old girl.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
And the talk on the Internet goes from one thing to the other, and, you know, you can see the extremities that people go to because of what they believe, and it's a shame. But the biggest, I would say, the majority is like, you know, what are you talking about? It was consensual. They think that they really care about each other. Is this because they're gay? And what's inappropriate? They don't talk about what's inappropriate. Does that mean somebody saw them kissing on school grounds? And because she's 18 and the other girl is 14, you know, it's like an adult with a minor, which is also ludicrous. Spike and I are 5 years apart. I think, you know, some things just don't make any sense. Now, plus that, being able to call anybody that does anything inappropriate a predator, I also think is a misconception. I don't necessarily think that that's true. But, of course, we only know what is being said to us on the media, so I would, thank God I don't have to make that decision, but if I did, I would certainly want to know more about this story and see how inappropriate it is. And if the 14-year-old was relentlessly pursued or something like that, then I might want to say, you know, we need to talk to you about this. This is not proper behavior. But I have a real rough time believing. She's been expelled from the school, and she's in jail as we speak.
Oh, well. Well, you know, I'm kind of on the fence with that kind of stuff, because, like you said, there's so much more information you have to have. You know, was this somebody who was 14 who was closer to 15? Was this somebody who was 18 who was close to 18? You know, if you're talking about a 14-year-old and a 25-year-old, then that's completely inappropriate. But when you're talking about 14 and 18, especially if you've got someone who maybe was a little bit was closer to 15 or something like that, there's not a lot of difference. You know, when I was 14, you know, I knew that I was attracted to people that were 17 or 18 years old, and if I had gone out with them, I would have been mortified if they had gotten in trouble. You know, I mean, it's just, there's not that much difference. You know, you're not really an adult at 18. I'm sorry, you're not. I don't care what the law says. And to charge somebody with that kind of a crime, you know, you're not talking about an 18-year-old and an 8-year-old. I mean, that's obvious. But
right.
When you're talking about a 14 or 15-year-old, you're teenagers at that point, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes there's the fact that they were both women may have exacerbated people's reaction to the situation.
Well, I think that you're right, and I also think, you know, maturity and different things like that certainly play into the whole thing. And I one of the comments that was on the internet was, you know, when I was 14, I got invited to the senior prom by an 18-year-old, and everybody thought it was wonderful that I got to go to a senior prom when I was 14. And
yeah.
And the boy kissed me goodnight, and the, you know, we, and I'm thinking to myself, I think I did that myself, and but there
yeah.
was nothing, you know, horrible about it, and this is for sure. Because of the connotations that go along with the homosexuality. One, mm-hmm. in one, you know, it's funny because it, so much of the world now is getting it and accepting it, and yet the people that sit in seats of power, are they in the bathroom all day? I mean, what are they, aren't they paying attention to what's going on?
That's a very interesting question, because I do tend to agree that it seems to be the people in the with the power are the ones that are the most out of touch with the reality of what's going on in the world where they're making judgment calls.
Mhm. Yeah, I just, you know, and I know some really, really, really people I have tremendous respect for that are really smart, and even they have tendency to say things that, you know, make the hair stand up on the back of my neck, and I think to myself, God, how can you be so smart and so dumb all at the same time? But I also think that if you're going to separate a 14-year-old from an 18-year-old because of the age difference, then you better not let any more 14-year-olds go to the prom with an 18-year-old, a boy
exactly.
and a girl. And so if you're going to start drawing lines like that, you better get out your ruler, because you're going to have a lot of lines to draw. Because it's one thing to say, you know, I mean, what's good for one always has to be good for everyone. And you
exactly.
cannot, you, I mean, that what they're putting out there right now, first of all, just to have her sit in jail today, if I was her mother, oh, my good God, I'd be going wacky. And we both know I've dealt with similar things, and I don't go wacky if they're wrong.
Yeah, no,
you know.
You
if they deserve to get punished, they deserve to get punished. But I really can't see where this requires a term in jail. Especially, I mean, the father and the mother of the 18-year-old, of course, are devastated, just devastated.
Wow.
And the parents of the 14-year-old, I guess, can't be contacted or something. But it's a heartbreaker. It's really, really a heartbreaker. And
now,
I don't...
Now, to be clear, if there was any coercion, or if the 14-year-old, like you said, was being sought after or stalked or something, that's different, all right?
It's a whole different story.
It's a whole different story. I mean, I want people to understand that you and I, you know, we realize that. But if this
Absolutely.
Was something where these two really just cared about each other and they were attracted mm-hmm. to each other, hey, that's what happens with 14 and 18-year-olds. I'm sorry. Like I said, when I was 14, I had attraction to people that were that much older than me. You know, it's a natural
yeah.
attraction, you know. And if anybody had ever gotten in trouble because they were reciprocating and showing me attention back, I would have been devastated. It would have destroyed me, you know, because
mm-hmm.
it was a very wholesome, very, very real, you know, affection for each other, you know. So you have to look at the relationship in its totality. Is there anything that, when you use the word inappropriate, what does that mean? Was it depraved? Was the 14-year-old being harmed in some way? Or are they saying it's inappropriate strictly because of the age? And if that's it, where did the 20-year jail sentence come from?
Well, that's,
you know,
because she's an adult. That's the other thing I want to say. Our government is very confused about when you're an adult. For some things, you're an adult when you're 18. For other things, you're not an adult until you're 21.
I know. I agree.
So that's a real gray area in its own. And
mm-hmm.
and if you, you know, so now that means, you know, well, Plus that, an 18-year-old and a 14-year-old are in school together. And I got to tell you, if we took a survey, I bet you we could find a million people within the span of 6 months that has in high school or at some point in time in their life been involved with somebody at least 4 years older or 4 years younger than themselves. I mean, it's ludicrous.
Absolutely. Yep.
And the 14-year-old, from everything I could understand, says it's, consensual, that they care about each other very much. So there is no coercion, there is no stalking, at least at this point in time. That's what they're saying. Again, this is hard to comment on because we're not so in the know. We just have to believe and trust in what we hear, in the media. But they were ticker taping her even during all the other trauma that happened in the world today. So it's a big deal. They're making it a really big deal. So, and that is the other thing I wanted to say. We're down to 4 minutes, and I wanted to give our love and condolences and strength and support to all the poor folks in Oklahoma. And from what I understand, it's not over with there. People have lost, many, many people have lost their homes. The numbers have changed every time I've watched the news today, so I'm not going to quote any numbers on deaths or injuries or the loss of homes, but the pictures that they're showing on the television are just horrific. And I know from hurricanes here in Florida, going way back to Andrew, just seeing that kind of natural forces at work makes you feel very small and very helpless. And my heart goes out to them tenfold. And I would imagine for all of us that are local, there will be things popping up all over. This is Memorial Day weekend. There will be things popping up all over, opportunities for you to give in some way, since, we're already talking about the fact that a lot of us don't have any money. There's always other stuff you can give, that can of spinach that's been in your cupboard because nobody will eat it for the last 3 months. Anything like that will be welcomed, I'm sure.
Wow.
So I'm sure those kind of drives will happen very soon. I want to, but I do want to put out there, just because I like saying it out loud, that it breaks my heart to know that many people have gone through that much devastation yet again.
Wow.
It's our world has been in a real uproar, and I'm hoping that it means that we're doing that turnaround that we all keep praying for and striving for, and I hope that we and all of you are going to be a part of it, and that things turn around and put our lives in a much more stable, much more caring, much more enriched space, and maybe then even Mother Nature will calm down and give us a break for a while. So,
well, I believe
anything
exactly
from you, Ms. Shelley?
Well, I was just saying that I believe that's exactly where we're heading. I think that any time you go through growth spurts, there's always turmoil, like they call it growing pains, that kind of thing. And I think that as a civilization, we as human beings are going through some very needed changes. Some people already get it. Some people are getting it now. And some people are resisting it. But the bottom line is, more and more people are becoming aware every day that some very necessary changes are needed, that we've got to get back to good values. And I think on some level, because we're all energy, I think on some level the planet reacts to that energetic shift going on. So, yeah, I think as we progress forward and things improve, I think the planet will start cooperating with us a little bit better too.
Yeah, I think it's true. I think that, like you just said, it's a lot of it. A lot of the things, what are termed natural disasters, are incurred through energy, and we are energy. We people are electric and we're energy, and a lot of the bad energy is very sadly brought on by us. So the more copacetic and the more peaceful the rest of us become, so will Mother Nature. So from my heart to yours, everybody, good night and God bless. Good night, Miss Shelley. Thank you.
Good night, Rainey. Good night, everyone.